The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2023, Charting the Course, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join. or by making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, please visit libraplanet.org/conference.
I'm Sean O'Brien. We're going to talk about a project here that I think is pretty interesting, that we've been working on for a while.
And I'm Mikolai. I've been doing coding, some architecturing, and together with Sean, we want to present it to you now.
And if you know me at all, you probably know me from Privacy Lab, which is an initiative at Yale Law School. I've presented about free software, digital self-defense classes, that kind of thing here before. Okay. So we're going to talk about different models, network models, just some very basic stuff. You'll forgive us a little bit if we're going over territory that you're all intimately familiar with. But the current state of affairs for most folks when they're using services, especially web services, right, is this digital feudalism. Your computation, it's on somebody else's machine, and therefore you can be basically abused, right? And now we're starting to see actual end-to-end encryption, right, for transporting this data primarily, sometimes even at rest, right? But you still don't necessarily have control unless you have local first computing, right? Unless you're starting to actually take that computation and run it on the client side on your local machine, okay? And that term local first is a very interesting one. I did not coin it. I can't remember who did. But you want to check it out. I think that's going to be a keeper. Okay. Even with local first computing, right, even if you're writing an application around a set of protocols, let's say, and you're making sure that that application is focusing on the client, on the end user, on the local side of things, it still can be too authoritarian, right? A lot of these models still rely on too much centralized infrastructure, and that includes a lot of the new things that folks are calling Web3, right?
So in order to fix the problem of monopoly, we always talk about the federation. And the federation actually, from the time when SMTP was introduced in 1982-4, have been thought of the way where users talk to their server, then server talks to some other service on another domain on their behalf, and then talk to users of those. So essentially, all of the work that the client should have been doing is delegated to that server. I want to point out, A, that there's a delegation, and B, that there needs to be a cooperation between the two servers. Now, when you delegate all of the work, you have this problem with the metadata. Even if you send the data encrypted, end-to-end encrypted, for example, PGP mail, the server must know that Bob is actually sending message to Alice, and Alice get the email, you know, server usually shows that it's from Bob, etc. And the other part is that this cooperation breach sometimes gets abused, and it gets abused, so if you remember Google used to have the Hangouts that was XMPP client, very nice, and then they decided to cut the rest of the half of the world, free world, supposedly federated world where everybody is the same, but they cut it out. And this is the part which actually, in 1980s, we haven't thought about it, but that's what actually happening. The more recent action was Slack cut out of their cooperation. It was again XMPP. If you're trying to run SMTP server, for example, to send email, it's a cooperating service. You have to convince Google that you are not a spammer, right? So again, you are not allowed to enter into this system because servers have to cooperate. And that's what we mean by federation in a classical sense. As it turns out, we have had the user experience of having a federated experience talking to somebody else on different domain all along since the 90s when the web was introduced. The idea is that your web browser checks some naming system, particular DNS, and opens in one domain, it opens New Yorker, and in another domain, it will open the Boston News, right? Sorry, I'm Canadian, I'm floating here. But those two newspapers don't have to cooperate between each other to deliver for the user an experience of actually working as if the world is free and they can talk to everybody, right? And so this exists, have already existed in WordPress. When it is like on a web page, because there's no cooperation between the servers.
So that sort of federation, of course, we're familiar with, that sort of self-hosting, right? How many folks here actually self-host web applications, right? A lot of us have had to do that. I've certainly had to do my fair share, and it's not too much fun. But it's where a lot of folks are at. What we want to talk about is a combined approach, where we're trying to take the best parts of this local-first, client-side focus. We want to combine that with, of course, strong encryption and end-to-end encryption, right? And we also want to think seriously about federation. And partially what you'll see here is that in some ways it's resurrecting those old models of, you know, protocols like email and so on, where we're trying to make sure we have the ability for folks to run decentralized infrastructure and still contact other people. But we clean up the metadata, right, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Do you want to talk maybe about how 3N Asmail works in this context?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, where's the mouse? Do you see the mouse? Yeah. So let's say Bob wants to send an email to Alice. His client knows where it should be sending. So that identifier in naming system. So Alice at her domain, bank.com, for example. A request to DNS, to the naming system, can be done anonymously. And it can be done in such a way that DNS doesn't know when to lie. So different ways can be done. Bob's computer sends an end-to-end encrypted message to Alice's server, inbox, just an inbox. Inbox doesn't know from who this message came. Bob doesn't tell anything in that message. Alice will know from a server only that there is some bytes for her. Her client computer is able in the hardware that exists already for 10 years to check different keys which fit, and then whatever key fit, it means that it was from that person. That's one case when the keys are already known. The other key is for the first contact problem. It's using of mailer ID, and that's the part of the how few different protocols meet together in order to create a very comfortable and nice base on which we can make applications.
So rather than the federation model of having to use an intermediary to sort of pass messages, right? We're using an existing, well-known, you know, and everybody's got it, naming system, right, DNS. But this also, and we want to work on this, could be .onion or some other naming convention. And that is allowing, of course, Alice and Bob in this example to find each other without having to need any other intermediaries, okay? And then the way the protocols work, of course, are least authority services, which is what we're titling the talk, right? So using the smart tricks we know about encryption, about signatures, about verification, right? We have all the tool sets to do this sort of thing without having to reinvent the wheel, so to speak. We're just taking the best aspects and sort of combining.
And this is not just for messaging. When you replace the message with some bytes that were end-to-end encrypted, but when the person decrypts that, it becomes a file, for example, then all of a sudden it's a storage protocol. But at the same time, the whole picture of how the federation works is the same. And Alice can work, Alice's computer can work with her server, and at the same time she can look at the shared data on some other server, as long as Bob gave her credentials. Of course, when we say Bob, it means like Bob sent some nice email, and internally application actually send the keys and stuff. Now, the protocols, we are making them in IEEE.
Yeah, so we're working with IEEE, the group called the SA Open. Someone who's there, who's one of their primary folks, is Joshua Gay, who was, of course, at the Free Software Foundation for a long time. We're publishing the documentation basically around the protocols there, and we invite you all, of course, to contribute and tear it apart if you'd like. It would be great to have some comments on that stuff. We are keeping that separate from the application and protocol code, partially because the IEEE repos require some MIT expat, basically, and we make sure that our protocols and applications are all GPLv3.
And another part of it is that this is the standards first. The standards, when they're done in a least authority way, they are such that if the client and server follow those principles, there's nothing to lose. And it also means that there should be many different implementations for clients and for servers. And that's what we want to see in the free world.
So this is the beginning, hopefully, of at least having some standardization. And hopefully this all takes off and we can keep moving it in that direction. Okay, now, the two projects that we represent, so Privacy Safe on my end and 3N Web on Nikolai's end, these are the two projects that are sort of working together to develop this stuff. Some of you may be familiar with some of the things we've done before with Privacy Safe. We were concentrating at the time, a few years ago, before the pandemic, on open hardware, right? Trying to, for example, run this stuff on BeagleBoards and so on. Still very much interested in that. But we want to make sure we release the actual application code, release the protocols, and start getting the services running and having real test users, real users trying this stuff out. Okay? These goals and principles, read them there yourself. We're very serious about data sovereignty, right? We're very serious about making sure that the control of computing is in the hands of the user. We're very serious about releasing our code and server implementations so that people can run this stuff on their own, right? And hopefully, we can make a dent as far as the abuse that goes on with all of these big tech services. As the advertising model for the internet starts breaking up, this is going to be more and more crucial because we don't want someone coming in who's Google 3.0 or some other thing. Or as we're starting to see with some of the social networking stacks, they're spinning up IPFS-based, matrix-based, whatever, Twitter clones, and Facebook says they have an ActivityPub thing. We need to make sure that we have our own stuff, and we're trying to contribute to that in our own small way. We did a PinePhone demo a few years ago. You can check that out. That's on the LibrePlanet site. We're not going to do PinePhone today, but we are going to do a demo. And now it's time.
Now it's a demo time. So the application itself, when it opens, first of all, this is a Trisco desktop, so it's a real stuff. It's a laptop of FSF, right? There's no trickery involved.
YF approved, baby.
Yes, and so I already logged in one user. That's number one. So the user have the different applications. They are running on their sites. So there's a storage application. This takes time. You can see there's a decryption part. So whoever takes your steals your laptop, they won't know what applications were on it. Now, when your applications, this data gets synchronized, the server the server doesn't also know what your applications are. Only you know that. So we have this idea that you own now that system, which can be open and exist on multiple of your devices. And this whole Chromebook miracle, where you lose one Chromebook, you open another, sign in. That's what we have done, except that there's no all-seeing eye in the middle. You choose which provider for these protocols you use. It can be your own server. And may I add, if you use the next cloud server at home, ask your question, what happens if that gets stolen? Somebody gets into your house. If the server is 3N web server, there's nothing that can be taken from it. So we have right now applications for storage, contacts, and this code is the preview. We need your support to make us to allow so that we can write the Rust implementation of it so that it runs faster. Because the time it was opening, it was just needed to decrypt the binary or whatever the script is. So here's an interesting thing. So on this task bar, basically we have one user, FSF folks. What about we add another account, we log in. So for example, I had my personal account, now I'm logging in into as a company, a different account. There's already convenience, like there were two accounts, it already shows me a different one. Let me type the password. Now watch these bars. Yeah, you see, so the bars now separate. The ones, some windows are for one user, other windows for other users. And we need to work on this user experience as well, because maybe sometimes you want a different colors for different users.
We might have frozen the machine.
We have frozen the machine.
Okay, we're working on it. And well, of course, we already did a demo video in Driscoll before on similar hardware. And we'll make sure that's on the web and also on the FTP server for FSF so you guys can see what's going on. But basically what you're seeing here is we're taking the analogies, right? An address book for contacts. We have mail for the email analogy, right? Messaging, just traditional chat messaging, and then also, and it's kind of Slack-like, I think, the interface at the moment, or I should say Mattermost-like, I guess. And also storage, you know, having an actual sort of file system tree, directory view, and so on. But we're shipping them in a different way. So we're taking those analogies, taking those things, and we're making sure that the application is running in such a way that, you know, as Mikolai says, if somebody steals your stuff, they're not going to be able to, you know, steals the actual hardware that this stuff is running on, they're not going to be able to figure out what's going on, read into the data, et cetera. This is, of course, crucial right now. We saw a lot of folks, of course, move to Mastodon relatively recently, hundreds of thousands of folks, and they're currently sending DMs, right, in the plane, at least at rest, on a lot of those servers. You know, so we need to start solving these kinds of problems, taking the analogies that users are familiar with, that are useful to their workflows, that they use every day, right, and then making sure that we are giving them something else. Now, we have basically services that we're going to run on a domain that you're welcome to request early access to. If you go out to privacysafe.io, there's a form there. You ask name and email. I don't care if you give us a real name or if it's a temporary email or whatever, but we need some way, of course, to contact you when we actually have the services up and running. And then we'll give you access to, you know, what we're running on our domain. Of course, we want folks to run other domains, right? That's the whole point. We also have an open source collective foundation with them. They're a 501c6. And we're hoping we can get some donations for some of the goals that we have, right?
Yes, the goals that we have, as I mentioned, to do the Rust implementation for the client, the Rust implementation for the spec server, which you can already download. It's just written, for example, in Node.js. We already, for example, have an implementation for our encryption code, but because this code is in Rust, the client has concept of runtimes, and runtimes are, at this moment, either it's Rust or it's WASM. So basically, we had this, whatever froze the machine probably was WASM encryption running in that WASM thing. Rust for the core, some polish on the user interface, some things. For example, as I showed you, you have one user and another user. Should those different windows be maybe different colors? How about people who are colorblinded? What kind of contrast for them so that they don't accidentally go into wrong window, sending a wrong message, something like that?
And other things. I mean, everybody's got big dreams, right? We want to strengthen the software supply chain, right? Try to make this as verifiable as possible when the code is delivered to the end user. We'd like to, of course, also make sure we're bundling and packaging for things like F-Droid, right? We want to make mobile applications and so on, and doing that in a very specific freedom-respecting and privacy-respecting manner.
And of course, like the mobile story cannot go without client-side being rusted, because if you just seen the computer froze, and our mobile devices are not yet on the level of our modern ThinkPads.
So that's pretty much it. We were going to demo a little more, but we didn't get a chance to do so. But if you go out to privacysafe.io, I'm going to be filling that in today, too, with some more videos and so on. This is sort of a soft launch. We're taking we're taking inspiration from the restaurant industry. But you're all welcome to please get in on the early access and play around with it and so on. So thank you very much.
Well, hold on. Please clap. Questions and machine is booting up. Sorry, I should have.
Maybe you'll be able to get the interface up.
Yes.
Questions?
Yeah.
And I think if you have questions, if you could come up to the mic, I'll try to repeat your questions for the stream as well. But we've got a microphone here.
Sean, also, if you could.
Sorry, I don't have it. It's, yeah, okay.
Yeah, pretty close to your mouth, so it picks up on.
Yep. I need to hear my own echo. Yeah. Hey.
Hi. So I have two questions. The first one. Kind of interesting that you said that the server doesn't need to know what applications that the client has. So I'm wondering if the client is able to request specific data that's encrypted. Like, let's say if I'm using a storage that might have several gigabytes, but if I just want to request my messages, is it able to do that? Or does it get all of the data and then decrypt it?
So we're currently separating out the protocols, right? So the 3N storage is a separate protocol than ASMail. So obviously we can figure out whether you're using one protocol or the other. My understanding is the data is no different, though, for either one.
Right? Yes. For the storage, all of the binaries, they all have random names, random unique names, so unique for you, but they're random. So let me open this. So this is the data. So this first part is actually on your server. It's actually just a base64 of your username. So that's fine. That is known to everybody. But here, for example, in sync, we have objects. And notice the names. They are split in a little tree fashion so that they can be put onto flash drives, because they use FAT32. And there's a limit on how many folders you can have. But if you, all of you, our binaries are the same, they have to be in the same spot. So in order to hit the limits for example, FAT32, no more than 10,000 reasonable folders, we need this structure. And I believe the Firefox is doing precisely the same thing. Anyhow, this two unsynced is actually, can we open it with, I don't know, text?
So the answer is basically no. but what's very cool about this is we want folks to run services, right, and be able to say, here's the encrypted blobs, right, if they have some sort of FISA order, who the heck knows what, right? Hopefully that doesn't happen to anyone here. But the idea is we're trying to remove some liability from the folks who are running the service.
Right. What, why this happened?
Don't worry about it, man. It's cool. Thank you.
Yep, so I had one more question. You might have covered this, but I wasn't sure if there's any expectation of having interoperability with existing protocols like SMTP and XMPP for messaging.
So the trick here is that on the client side, my client, for example, when it tries to send a message to you, it will do this request in DNS on your domain and check whether you have and actually enabled 3N web servers services. So the only thing, so when you start your 3N web services for your domain, you just need to put TXT records in DNS. That's it. And that's the only step you need to participate. So the client, when I'm sending, it checks that. If it doesn't find those, it may send an email and do something else. But all the 3N web servers are not connecting with this. At the same time, it's also, in general, in abstract, it's a question of, can I have a non-leaky pipe and a leaky pipe and connect them to and don't have leaks, right? The answer, of course, there will be leaks on those sides. So the transitions, some of the places would have to be changed. But I believe, for example, things like Mastodon, it's a public forum communication. It's not necessarily that there will need to be a completely private application for it, for example. But there might be an application that has the public part, and also messages that are sent, they're sent using that protocol where server doesn't know who is talking to who. So, and the user will have like, oh, I have private DM messages in a Mastodon app, right?
And folks who, for example, are running Mastodon, right? But obviously the domain is the big deal there. So, you know, sort of gluing on this piece, the asmail messaging, for example, as DMs, federated DMs, would be very cool, right? There's a lot of options for that already, of course, but that haven't been implemented, but this is one way you could do that. A use case that I think is very interesting, and I think we're going to explore a lot more, is using the 3N storage for settings and home directories, and then syncing across different GNU/Linux servers, whatever, you know, desktop machines potentially as well, to just have people be able to go from machine to machine with their settings and then have that strong knowledge that they don't have to worry about being exposed as the data goes over the pipe. So,
thank you.
Yep.
They didn't understand how you can remove the from metadata from emails. Which key do you choose if you don't know whom is the email from?
So we're using, so you've repeated the question to the screen, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're using the analogy of email. We're not actually using email.
Yeah, it's not an email per se. So there are, in sending that message, and as I was describing, Alice had a key for Bob. And in that scenario, encryption was only possible only when Bob or Alice have the correspondent key. Otherwise, you know whether your encrypted bytes are opened or not opened. That's piece where people know each other's keys. The other piece is so-called the first contact problem. The first contact problem can be solved in many ways. One of the ways, I ask Sean, give him my business card with the QR code of your key, number one. Number two, a friend can pass that card. Number four, a friend can pass such message, which Edward Snowden, for example, have been doing, right? And the least one is like usually you don't have it, and it's very common case is like, how else can it be done? And the way we do it is that on this awesome mail protocol, as it's called, authenticated secure mail protocol, the server can keep your introductory public key. That introductory public key, your client's software has signed with mailer ID certificates. That mailer ID is one of the protocols in the family of 3NWeb protocols. That mailer ID, you may sound familiar because there was a browser ID protocol done by Mozilla. So Mozilla, it was a concept of having a non-tracking identity on the web. So the hack against the browser ID or persona, their system, was actually performed on the level of implementation in the browser. The first phase of how you pass password to your identity provider was done in a password. That hack, but it doesn't mean that the core cryptographic concept are wrong. So we took those core concepts that worked, attached it to a proper part that cannot be broken, and that's what mailer ID is. And that mailer ID piece allows us now to have things like authentication to other sites on one hand, or authenticate my key. So I put my key on my server. Somebody comes and say, hey, there's Mikolai, can I have a key for him? They get a key, but then they check the signatures. So their client computer, our supercomputers in our pockets can now actually do the cryptography of checking the keys to make sure that it was me who put that key in. Yes, strictly speaking, there against this case, there might be some attacks, but those people who have this threat model, they use help of a friend to pass the key.
We make it as hard as possible, but of course there's DNS poisoning, there's you know, all kinds of things, and that's why the software supply chain is going to be so crucial. Have a question?
Yeah, so for the device syncing that we're talking about, I'm trying to just understand what exactly is how the sync is happening when we have this big blob. If I have, you know, a gazillion contacts and I realize that I want to go in and I misspelled one name and I change one letter, what kind of network is there? Is there that an efficient operation or is that a big?
So, very good question. So that 3NWeb thing, there are protocols, then there's also formats, and then there are APIs. So APIs for how your application talks to the platform layer, that kind of thing. So what I showed you initially, those apps, they can be written by somebody else, by you, not necessarily the provider of the platform. So that's one thing. Now, for storage. Storage, so there's a format, I call it XSP, stands for X-Salsa protocol, because so our binaries that have cipher in it. We want that cipher, for example, for the file to have the following properties. As you said, I change a little bit. Is it possible that I just re-encrypt a part of it and send it to the server? Number one. Number two, is it possible to do it, so for example, I change in the middle of the file, but the server doesn't know. So that the pattern of how you change your file is not visible to the server. You want to obfuscate that part. So that also present there. So in a nutshell, that binary is actually has ciphers. The cipher parts are what salt library, NACL. You know, the salt library, the libsodium produces a nice piece. It's an approach also to writing the cryptographic library in such a way that I am a developer cannot screw it up. very good. So the cryptographers make sure that you have this function, it either decrypts and you know it decrypts normally, or you have something is wrong. Either key is wrong or some bytes are wrong. So now our big file contains the small chunks of that. At the same time, the question is, how do I insert the chunk in between? There's the header. And these details I actually thought through. So the wish list of can I change in a cryptographic way in such a way that there's no reuse of nonce that is used to encrypt, that is done there. It's, I really try to put everything on that wish list and implemented it. And I really, hope that you guys look at it.
But if you're certainly, crypto, you know, yeah. At scale, there's computation, right? And that's going to be expensive in one way or another. Yeah. We're hoping, if folks are interested and we can get this stuff bootstrapped, that we can solve those issues, just like a lot of other amazing projects that use strong encryption have solved.
Yeah, but there's also non-cryptographic side to your question, and that is interesting. We have now computation locally on different devices. How in general would you do a synchronization? And within our project, we initially thought, oh, the core will do it, the platform will do it. Turns out there's no head that fits all the needs for every different program. So now it's like basically your application, your developer, you design how you want to synchronize and which parts you actually need to synchronize. And as a result of this, when you have an application, right now it's like through a web, like a web app, inside of your window object, there's W3N, where you can have a capability of having a storage. And one of the storages can be synchronized, and another one is totally local. It's encrypted, but it's local. So, yeah.
Hello. Would you please explain how it's possible to authenticate on a server without the server being able to track that your client has?
So on the slides that we showed, my home server always knows who am I. But the other person who leaves the messages, they might be, so for example, leaving the messages for me can be that whoever leaves them should present this random token. And this random token I already gave to my contacts. So server doesn't know precisely who that is. Now, then the question arises also, like if are different people using the same token so that you obfuscate a little bit, or do you use the same token for a different person? This choice of strategy belongs actually on the platform side. It's not part of the protocol. And you can create any type of models. At this moment, the strategy is actually Bob's computer gives to Ellie's computer three different tokens that she uses. She basically attaches it. And the token only needed to help Bob to find the key quicker actually, because the server will accept anything. At this moment, we did it this way.
So the token is, these tokens are private. They can't be shared. Otherwise, you'll be at risk of spam. Right?
So the question of spam will always come in a situation where server cannot help you with that. So in a sense, yeah. So basically, there need to be, we have a main protocol, and then we have tweaks of how much we want to tweak, how much we want server to help. So for example, this is unknown token. Do you actually want server to deal with that or not? I think server actually checks right now. Now, the first messages that are coming, they're using introductory key. So the server can see whether it's the first message or not the first message. That's the only thing that is present in the form of the message. And for the introductory messages, we just have a limit that shortens what that message is. On the client side, the platform will tell you whether you ever talked to that address or whether you have never seen that address. So this whole thing, which we call CEO scam, where email comes, it looks like for human maybe similar, but computer knows it's exactly, it's unknown email, for example, right? But here the platform ensures that it checks that and it gives to an application a flag within the API, which should be rendering that this is a message from a person, you never talk to them, here it is, do you want to open it or is it a scam? So, yeah.
From a user experience standpoint though, you know, there's going to be secrets, there's going to be keys and so on with any of this stuff. If you're focusing on the client, that have to be handled by the client, right?
Now, the question of spam, again, since it has been beaten to death in the last 20 years, I also address you. So I was at a real crypto conference. I believe it was in New York. They oscillate between the places, maybe around 5 years ago. The Signal folks were presenting. Signal folks were talking about this problem of spam and the franking. The franking is like, how do we do something with the message, which is end-to-end encrypted, at the same time, server shouldn't know what's in it, but at the same time, we want to tell the server that maybe it's bad or something like that. And their talk, and at the time, they had a relationship with Facebook, so it was all timed. There was also a talk about franking from the Facebook. And they're like, yeah, we need that, blah, blah, blah. I asked our Signal guy, tell me, do you have a problem with spam in Signal? They do not. They do not have a big scale, because maybe the problem of spam is such that you usually don't open the doors to strangers. And the email, current emails, just feeds us messages from strangers, and that's the problem.
So you could see a situation where we have settings, for example, yeah, that say, hey, if I don't know this person, I can never get a message from them. And also, you know, as far as keeping secrets, you know, on the client end, I think we have, for better or for worse, learned quite a bit from the cryptocurrency blockchain folks as far as local wallets. You know, there's millions of people using MetaMask, right, and it has taught people how to store secrets locally and take care of them. So I do think we can do a certain amount of education around it as well as have a nice user interface in our application. So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Cool. Thank you all so much.
Sorry for freezing your laptop.